broken and shocked?
Well, our first response is just shock. We're shocked that this decision was taken. The CRTC could have issued mandatory orders against CKLN for being in non-compliance, which means that it's more serious and it becomes something that the court looks after, or they could have even suspended the license of the station for a little while. And in fact, they chose to jump over those two and go straight to revoking the license. And so our first response is just, what's happening?
Thank you so much, neighbors. And Grant Turner, it looks like our time is all gone.
Worried, choked up and ruined, left out, disinherited, sweating, frustrated, hopeless, despairing, depressed.
Express yourself. Express yourself.
We've made tremendous improvements in the past year. We've been in rebuilding process. So, we started from station was basically broken and
join the Locked Out Women programmers of CKLN FM in Toronto for a 5-hour national radio direct action.
As we reclaim the airwave.
Locked Out Women hosts and DJs of CKLN will stream to the internet from the Imperial Pub in downtown Toronto for a 5-hour national broadcast.
And be part of this landmark event in community-powered grassroots media.
Take that.
And I am one of the locked out volunteers at CKLN. I regularly host Friday word of mouth news.
The best scenario will be that everybody gets back their shows and that, you know, the board that we legitimately elected gets in place and that CKLN can continue to broadcast and it's not damaged by this whole instability.
You know, station was basically broken and worked really hard to put it back together and worked really hard to meet all the CRTC requirements. I think if we'd been given more time, we would have been fully compliant. I think so.
In the beginning,
things were pretty bad. So what happened was that somebody you couldn't see came on and announced the program. And then the sound was switched off, and someone you couldn't hear came on and sang a song.
Look out!
Look here. I want to register a complaint.
We are sorry that we have a breakdown. We are trying to put things right just as quickly as we can.
The Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, or CRTC, the public authority regulating and supervising the Canadian broadcasting system,
even one of the commissioners herself says in the decision, she wrote a dissent to the decision, that she's done some research, and as far as she can tell, this is the first time that that's ever happened.
Just bear in mind that 9/10 of everything is posture. Stand up.
But if that frequency goes up, we want to make sure that that space is there as a space for a campus and community broadcast.
If we go off the air, we'll leave a real hole in the community and in on the radio dial, because I mean there are close to 200 people here volunteering, but they represent many more people, many more listeners and many more communities that aren't normally heard on the radio.
Come on, yo. Express yourself.
They have all these opportunities for people to get involved and to either listen to the amazing content or listen and walk into the station, much like CKUT. You can walk into the station, you can get trained, and then you can be making radio that speaks to your experience and speaks to your community. That's huge.
You come to realize how true is that old saying, variety is the spice of life.
I'm 88.1.
This is System Out of View by tuning in to Word of Mouth, CKLN's conscious news programming. And make sure to be listening this game for Pink Antenna, CKLN's queer news feature. Pink Antenna takes a truly alternative and personal perspective.
Word of Mouth here on CKLN Radical Radio.
Well, with audio radio, we don't really have anything because...
no care and no interest in the political history of the station and what it means to the community and what it means to the city, you know, and in general, because how many more outlets of, like, you know, alternative, like, you know, coverage or, like, media do you have in the city? Not many, right? So it's very few. Everything is going corporate nowadays, so you gotta, like, really, you know, defend those few outlets that are out there.
Well, CKLN has been around for about 27 years, 1983, so just over 27 years, and it's been a real leader in a lot of ways.
How they've gone with my storyline.
You are tuned into a special 3-hour protest broadcast. Keep CKLN on the airwaves on CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting live from Montreal. We dedicate our special broadcast to our sister station in Toronto, CKLN 88.1 FM. We stand in solidarity with CKLN in the face of the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission's decision to revoke Toronto's first campus radio station's license. On Friday, January 28th, the station was given 2 weeks before being forced to shut down operations. Back in 2007, the CRTC renewed CKLN's license for 7 years. CKLN is based on Ryerson campus with 250 watts. The station has 200 volunteers from diverse communities across Toronto. We want to make note that currently there are 3,000 signatures on the CKLN, Save CKLN online petition, found at petitiononline.com/mod_pearl. I think the best way to search it is to search Save CKLN petition, and you can get to it from their website at ckln.fm. The goal by the end of the show is to have 3,333 signatures. We're going to keep you updated throughout the next 3 hours. So please go and sign CKLN's petition and encourage your friends and colleagues to sign CKLN's petition. The CRTC, which cited the following non-compliances with their license as the basis for their decision. The first, non-compliance during the lockout period. The second, filing of annual returns. The third, the provision of logs and records. And the fourth, the licensee's response to commission requests for information. Louise Poirier, a commissioner of the CRTC, attached a dissenting opinion with the decision to revoke the license. Poirier wrote the decision created a bad precedent. We're going to quote from that dissenting opinion right now. Immediate revocation without first applying any other regulatory measure is clearly inconsistent with the commission's usual practice. No other licenses have been revoked in this manner in recent commission history. Such revocations have always been preceded by either a mandatory order or a short-term license renewal. The station experienced upheaval for the past several years, including a 7-month period where station programmers were locked out of the CKLN studios. Since that dark period, the station has slowly been rebuilding and reclaiming. In the fall, they raised $50,000. To fund a station manager position to oversee the day-to-day operations of the station. Last Monday, we began talking with CKLN programmers and campus community radio folk. Today, we continue the special 3-hour broadcast. We open our airwaves to the voices of CKLN programmers and members and campus community radio folk across the country. We're going to start with Andy Williams, who is a programmer here at CKUT. He is the host of The Goods on Sunday, and he's a CKLNer from way back. So stay tuned.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
My kind of music! I love it! I live with it! I sleep with it! I eat it! It's mine!
My name's Andy Williams, and I was a member of CKLN. Oh boy, going way back now. I guess originally probably about 20 plus years ago, I'd say, over 20 years ago. I was an active member doing a graveyard shift, and finally I got a slot on Saturdays doing a show called The Mix Back. And it was great. I got a lot of support from the people around. The interest came through just listening to a lot of different radio shows back in the day, where WBLK in Buffalo, David Kingston on CKUT, and Curtis Bailey on CIUT, and people like that. So I got myself involved at an early age of 17. I did a lot of the graveyard shifts, and then eventually I got to do subject matters and shows that I really wanted to dive into.
So back then, when you were a listener and then just becoming a programmer, what did you see the role of CKLN as in the Toronto community?
It was touching on a lot of the alternative back then, which wasn't really that visible in terms of media. We didn't really get to listen to a lot of the small labels, and also a lot of the community involvement in terms of mini festivals, in terms of the black community, in terms of the Filipino community, the whole gamut in terms of multiculturalism.
So you're still in community campus radio. You have a show here at CKUT. Why do you think it's important for CKLN radio to stay on the airwaves in Toronto?
Well, it's, as I said, it's reaching out to a lot of people, and it actually gives you a lot of information. So it's very informative that way in terms of getting the word out for a lot of smaller companies, smaller labels, and overall it's alternative music.
And the last question I have for you, Andy, is when you heard the CRTC decision on January 28th, it was released, what was your initial reaction? What's your response to that?
I was a little devastated because I knew the story from day one, and I thought it could have been worked out amongst the people at the show, at the station. So I'm thinking it was a lot bigger than the programmers and the directors and the board. So I'm not sure who else is involved, but I thought there was another party involved, which wasn't really. I think it was probably, in the beginning, I initially thought it was probably a buyout. Probably Clarinet instead of, I shouldn't be using people's names, but I thought it was probably going to be a buyout with another organization. I didn't really understand why it couldn't be discussed in a big public meeting, which didn't really take place, which also surprises me. It just kept lingering and lingering and lingering. And the next thing you know, I'm hearing the news now that, the CRTC is making I think it's a rash decision. But who am I to say?
Do you have anything else to add before I let you go?
I'd just like to thank a lot of those programmers who were there for me. Sharon McLeod, Mrs. Onari, Norman Otis Richmond, the list goes on, your David Kingston's. We need programmers like that on radio. So hopefully we can hear from those folks again.
And we're at 3,003 total signatures, so we're looking for 330 more. Go on, sign that petition. You can find it at ckln.fm. And next up, we're going to hear a piece produced by Christian Swartz. She was the former news coordinator at CKLN, and she produced a piece highlighting years and years of coverage that CKLN radio did in the Toronto community and beyond. So my name is Courtney. I'm going to ask Jess to throw that on.
CKLN is a volunteer in the mid-1990s. I was hired as news director in 2000. CKLN's news programming includes word-of-mouth news on weekday evenings, Rude Awakening on weekday mornings, Frequency Feminism's Saturday Morning Live, and the Spanish-language shows Aquí Nuestra América and Sembradores. Since 2000, over 100 volunteers have contributed to CKLN's news programming. Collectively, we have labored for thousands of hours to bring unheard voices to the airwaves and to learn skills in interviewing, writing for radio, and technical production. Our achievements have included sending teams to Quebec City for the Summit of the Americas in 2001 and to Montebello in 2007. We have broadcast direct from the streets, schools, jails, and workplaces. We have hosted international guests while striving to remember and respect the First Nations of Turtle Island. Here are just a few voices of volunteers and guests who've contributed to our regular news programming and also to special programming for Prisoner Justice Day, African Liberation Month, International Women's Day, Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Trans Pride, and the Homelessness Marathon.
Oh, the first time I came on the radio here, I was very shy, right, and secretive about everything, and I felt the whole world was against me at that time. I didn't want to be around people. I felt like everybody was against me because of what I experienced in life. After coming to the radio station, I felt like now it's like I don't care what people think. Learn to love me for who I am. And if you can't love me for my story and everything I've been through in my life, then you don't love me for the person I am. So
first, I must say thank you for inviting us. My name is Karen Dublin, and I am a room attendant at the Sheraton Center. I've been there for 13 years. We are part of the million workers in Toronto that make $29,000 or less a year. We are a vital part of the Toronto economy. We are the hospitality industry. We are the people that you see first when you come into the hotels. I'm very happy to know that, you know, we matters and that you can invite us here to let, you know, the community and the city of Toronto know the kind of work room attendants do. It's time we be recognized for what we're doing.
When I started driving taxi in Toronto, I didn't know the roads, I didn't know the streets, I didn't know the people who were living in Toronto. It was a great learning experience, but at the time, you get a lot of abuse from the people too, you know, like whenever you run into some kind of trouble, the first thing the people say is, "Yo, cabbie, where are you from?" And the conversations most of the time, right? So that's the racial thing is still there. So that's the stigma, right? So like
I'm speaking today with Matoi Monroe, one of the co-leaders of the United American Indians of New England. I wanted to speak to you today about Thanksgiving. I know instead of Thanksgiving, you've decided to celebrate a National Day of Mourning. Can you tell me how that event came about?
Sure. We commemorate a National Day of Mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, mm-hmm. On the U.S. Thanksgiving Day. It started back in 1970, and it was a response to this kind of mythology and to this deranged view of history that makes it seem as though Native people lived happily ever after and were happy that the Europeans were here and that sort of thing.
Hencle has been developing unsurrendered territory for quite some time, and with this particular parcel that we're on today, the proximity is too close to where we reside now, and there's a new law that's been created called the Ontario Places to Grow Law, which grants a lot of authority to municipalities in regards to rezoning, things like that. In the next 20 years in southern Ontario, they're expecting through that Places to Grow Law to bring 4 million people into the Golden Horseshoe area, and the majority of that land is under unsurrendered, like our unsurrendered territory.
So joining us now on CKLN 88.1 FM is Andile Mwitama, who is an organizer with an organization called the LPM, the Landless People's Movement, and is based in South Africa. The LPM was formed in 2001 to struggle for the return of stolen land.
Firstly, I'm happy to be here to share the experiences of South Africa. We must remember that South Africa is now 10 years into its democracy after about 350 years of white original, you know, European people of European origin who have oppressed South African blacks for those years. The issue again was land in South Africa. Colonialism was about stealing land of African people.
ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Are you sure you're ready?
Yes, I'm sure I'm ready. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Word of Mouth Show here on CKLN 88.1 FM. I'm your host, Samar.
And I'm Joe G, holding it down, ones and twos, ABCs, all that good stuff.
And as I understand it, you held it down last week, too, without me.
Yes, yes. Myself, another guest from the CKLN radio station, Black Krishna, and a whole bunch of informed, engaged listeners. It was a beautiful thing.
I know you
missed
me.
We shouted you out.
I know you missed me.
Yeah, we said that Samar was exercising her academic muscles. I think that's the term. How'd that go?
Writing my last exam. I loved it. It's over. It's over. I'm so happy. And I'm also happy for another reason. Tomorrow, May 1st, marks International Workers' Day. And on today's show, we're going to have a chance to speak with Cyril McCallico, co-editor of the Upside Down World magazine. The online mag focuses on Latin American politics, and he's pretty much going to break down why private security companies are recruiting thousands of Latin Americans to go fight in the Middle East. And in the later half of the show, we have a special live studio interview with an international action group protesting a Canadian gold mining company infamous for its human rights abuses. Do you know what that company is, Joe?
A dead war cannot oppose global peace. A dead war cannot invade other spaces. To kill war, you have to kill weapons. To kill war, you have to kill defense budgets. To kill war, you have to kill poverty. To kill war, you have to kill fear. To kill war, to kill war, to kill war.
And good morning. I'm Odelia Bay, and yes, that was the musical styling of Jane Cortez, as you would usually hear on a Saturday morning around here at about this time. A little bit different, though, a little bit of a twist today. The piece we played for you this morning is called War Devoted to War, and we thought it would be a good way to kick off our special broadcast this morning for International Women's Day. That's right.
Hi, this is Benedicta Madawa again, and we are still at the conference center at the HIV 16th conference, and with me in the studio is the Honorable Miss Mary Robinson. I have to mention that she's the first woman president of Ireland, and she's also a former United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, and currently she actually serves as a steering committee member of the Global Coalition on Women and AIDS. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
We are honored to have you here.
Hey there, you are listening to CKLN Radio Pride Programming. My name is Lori Erickson, and for the next half hour, we will be hopefully shattering some stereotypes, which are simplistic, restrictive, and oppressive by their very nature. We will be replacing them with something much more creative, complicated, accurate, and most importantly, sexy. We will also be creating and encouraging community, culture, and good times. Now I want you all to take a moment to think about these two terms carefully. First, the term queer. Now, the term disabled. What images and thoughts came to mind for you? What happens when you add these two words together? In the next half hour, we will be briefly uncovering some of the insight, laughs, and beauty that is found in the intersection of queerness and disability. The faggot wanted love. His mother would
And the time now is 20 minutes to the hour of 11 a.m. You're listening to CKLN 88.1 FM. Good morning and welcome to the special Pride edition of Saturday Morning Live. I'm Adrian Harewood. Well, this Pride weekend is a time for joy and celebration. It also provides a time for reflection and contemplation. Whether it has been figures such as Bayard Rustin, Audre Lorde, Ma Rainey, Angela Davis, James Baldwin, Lorraine Hansberry, Josephine Baker, Bill T. Jones, Billy Strayhorn, Alice Walker, Dionne Brand, Makeda Silvera, black gays and lesbians have played an integral role in defining contemporary notions of black identity.
In the cold weather, youth that are out there right now, I feel your pain. I was once there, and it's not you who's the problem. It's all the situations that you have factored in your life and came across in your life. That's what's the problem. That's what made you that way. So basically, just always keep your head up and chase your dreams. Don't follow them.
That was a collage of voices from CKLN's news programming from about 2000 until today. We thank CKUT for their solidarity and for their encouragement to celebrate the work we've done. We hope to have the opportunity to continue sharing news and public affairs programming with our listeners in Toronto and beyond.
That was a piece produced by Christian Swartz, former news director at CKLN. So our current count on petition signatures is 3,009 total signatures. We're looking for 3,330 by the end of today's special three-hour broadcast dedicated to keeping Radio CKLN on the airwaves. And it's 12:30 and we have until 3 o'clock, so please go online, go to ckln.fm and sign that petition. We're going to go to a few messages from our sponsors, and then we're going to return with Lauren Spears on the line, who is the head of the legal committee at CKLN, and she'll give us a perspective on legal options and where CKLN can go from here. Stay tuned.
Back to life, back to reality.
McGill Social Equity and Diversity Education Office presents the Black Histories, Black Futures Community Conference. Saturday, February 12th, registration opens at 8 a.m., presentations run until 7 p.m. at the Bronfman Building, 1001 Sherbrooke Street West, downtown McGill campus. Notez qu'il y aura des sessions en français et des services d'interprétation seront offerts.
Then join us at 9 p.m. at Il Mittore for our rap party, Fast Forward Rewind with Mr. Good Vibes, live performances by Ground Food and Karma Achika. For more information and to register, check out www.mcgill.ca/equity_diversity. Admission by donation. Everyone is welcome. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Assalamu alaikum. The IMAX Telus Theatre invites you to travel back in time. Experience an amazing adventure in a legendary setting. With Arabia 3D, explore the ruins of a lost city. Cross the desert with a camel caravan and relive the golden age of Islam. Witness the Hajj, the world's largest Muslim gathering. Arabia 3D. Discover a country rich in legend, looking towards the future. Only at the IMAX Telus Theatre at the Montreal Science Centre. The ultimate 3D experience.
Day of Action for Jawar Abu Rahma and the Palestinian Popular Resistance. February 10th. Join us in Montreal for an international women's-led day of protest in solidarity with Palestine to remember Jawar Abu Rahma, who was killed by lethal Israeli military tear gas in the village of Bilin. That's February 10th, 5:30 at Phillips Square, corner St. Catherine and Union, opposite the bay. End Israeli human rights abuses. Visit www.tadaman.ca, 514-664-1036. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
On Friday, January the 28th, the Canadian Radio and Television Commission, also known as the CRTC, decided to revoke CKLN's broadcasting license. The CRTC decision is a threat to all campus community radio stations. If you care about campus community radio and want to keep CKLN on the air, here's three things you can do.
CKLN is seeking support for donations from people in order to pay for legal fees. The donation link is cklnfm/funfestdonation.
CKLN is asking people to write their federal MP and ask them to help CKLN in their fight. You can find the procedures to contact your MP at ckln.fm.
CKLN has an online petition. Please visit cklnfm for the link to that petition.
Support CKLN, Toronto's oldest campus station, and support campus community radio across the country.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM, broadcasting live from Montreal. The time is currently 12:30. It's Monday, February 7th. And right now I have on the line with me Lauren Spears. She's a host of Rebel Music since 2003 on CKUT. Lauren spent her first 5 years at the station filling in programming until she started co-hosting the program Harmonic Convergence in 1999. Currently, Lauren is in her third and last year of law school, about to start her third year of motherhood. She is the chair of both CKLN's legal defense and the hiring committees. She's also part of the Emergency Public Awareness and Strategic Resistance Committee. Pardon. Hi, Lauren, are you there?
Hi, Courtney. Yes, I am. Thanks for having me on your show today. And thanks for all the support CKUT has done for CKLN. It's amazing. I love the three things you can do to help. That's amazing. I wish our station had done that.
So maybe you can start by talking about you had the legal perspective. You've been hashing it out with people for the last, I guess, week and 3 days since the decision came down on Friday, January 28th. Can you tell our listeners sort of what are the legal options for CKLN at this point?
Well, first off, to put it into a legal framework, because it's not just the legal options available to CKLN, it would be a similar case for any community radio or any campus community radio station that was given a decision by the CRTC that they didn't like. You know, but revocation is the most severe punishment that the CRTC can wreak onto an organization. So even some of the lesser measures that include mandatory orders or suspensions have the same processes for appealing. To start that framework off, I'm sure that you and most of your listeners know that the CRTC is the governing body that's empowered by Parliament to deal with all broadcast and telecommunication matters. So their powers are derived from a statute, which is called the Broadcasting Act. And in the Broadcasting Act, in Section 31, it says that decisions of the CRTC may be argued by asking for leave from the Federal Court of Appeal, which is the second highest court in Canada, just below the Supreme Court. Also in the Broadcasting Act, it says that you can appeal to your governor and council for support, which is currently what's going on with the CRTC and Stephen Harper's ongoing debate over internet usage-based billing. It's exactly the same situation. An appeal was made to the governor and council to intervene, and basically the government can trump the CRTC. So our options going forward were to ask the CRTC for reconsideration of their decision, also to make the request for leave to appeal from the Federal Court of Appeal. And it's not quite that simple. The Federal Court of Appeal is a very technicality-oriented court. In the lower courts, in the Supreme Courts, you tend to see more arguments of substance, and those arguments of substance being more important than form. In the Federal Court of Appeal, it's form over substance. So that's one of the hurdles that CKLN faces. Also, in the Broadcasting Act, it says that appeals can only be made on questions of law and jurisdiction. That means there's no point raising factual arguments, which is why their decision is actually particularly well-crafted from a legal standpoint. Main arguments that the people who were at CKLN and were privy to the lockout in 2009 and understand the law are compliant regulations.
Lauren, we're losing you a little bit. Is there anything you can do with your phone to try to adjust it?
Let me try moving to a different part of the house.
There you are. Better? Yeah, you're sounding better now. Please just repeat the last little bit.
What I said was that because it says in the Broadcasting Act that leave to appeal from the federal court will only be granted based on questions of law and jurisdiction, there is no sense in arguing with factual elements from their decision. Factual elements include very important considerations like their main beef is that we were non-compliant with certain regulations while we were off the air. And it's pretty hard to be compliant when you cannot enter a building. So that is something that we're not going to be able to argue in front of the Court of Appeal. It has to be questions of law and jurisdiction, and clearly the CRTC has the jurisdiction to make the decision that they did. so our legal strategy is going to have to hinge on finding questions of law that can be raised. Luckily, there's a very strong, very eloquent, and well-worded dissent by Madame Louise Poirier of the Commission, and in it, it gives us some pretty strong policy guidance. So policy and questions of law are different when you look at them from a legal perspective, but it's sort of, it's a guideline in of what direction we should take. So that's a very fortunate thing. Another positive thing going forward is that even though the harshness of the CRTC's decision, like the harshness of the punitive measure of revocation before issuing mandatory orders and suspensions, that is completely unprecedented. There's only one legal precedent for our lawyers to be working with. And in that precedent, though the facts are entirely dissimilar, it gives us some guidelines as to how to argue questions of law and jurisdiction. And in their case, and it was actually, it was a radio station in Quebec City called Schwa FM, they were granted an emergency stay of the CRTC's decision on consent by the CRTC. So they were able to continue broadcasting until their matter went before the courts.
Can you explain a stay to the audience?
A stay is pretty much the governmental version of, or the court version of telling your dog to stay. It means don't move, don't go anywhere, I'm doing something. And that's exactly what CKLN is asking the CRTC for. We are asking for a stay of their decision pending judicial review. So what that means is that we've asked them to hold off on yanking us off the air until we can take the issue of license revocation to the courts. We're not saying that we were not guilty. There is no point in arguing that we were 98% compliant since returning to air after the lockout that happened in 2009. It's a regulatory offense, and regulatory offenses have what's called absolute liability attached to them. And absolute liability means you either did it or you didn't do it. And we did it. 98% is not good enough in regulatory matters. It's like a parking ticket. You either park right or you park wrong. Unfortunately, there's no such thing as guilty with an explanation with the CRTC. But we are doing everything that we can on both of the available options to us, which are to appeal to our governor and council, and also preparing the materials so that we can ask for leave of the federal court to appeal. And the leave of the federal court to appeal is basically, it's a two-stage process. First, we have to put in a formal request that's submitted to the courts with, hopefully with the CRTC's consent, asking for their permission to hear this matter in the federal court of appeal. And if they think that our legal grounds are sufficiently worth consideration, then they will allow it, and it'll go to court. In the meantime, the stay would allow us to continue broadcasting while that was going on.
And the time is ticking because February 12th, you're off the air, right? So when do you find out about the stay?
I cannot answer how quickly the CRTC and the courts, the Federal Court of Appeal, will respond to an emergency motion. I can only tell you that in my limited experience as a law student, and I have to stress that to your listeners, I'm a law student. At no point have I done any legal advising. I have been trying to, my efforts have been spent trying to do exactly what I'm doing now, which is explaining the options to various people and also communicating with the lawyers to make sure that their materials are as strong as possible. We hope to hear from them as soon as possible. As far as I know, the request is going in tomorrow, first thing tomorrow, and in the family court, an emergency motion is looked at on the same day if there is a judge available after their cases. Sometimes it's the next day. But the family court, as I said, is not the same as the Federal Court of Appeal. The family court is here in Ontario is a lower court. It's a provincial court, and the Constitution of Canada divides the powers of the provinces and the country in sections 92 and 3, and the CRTC is a federally appointed commission. So we're working with the federal courts, who, as I said, are more about form over substance, and it's a bit more bureaucratic than say traffic court or family court, or even something as politically and policy driven as the Supreme Court.
So we're almost run out of time here. I just want to ask one last thing. It looks like there's several committees working together on the issue. So can you just quickly explain like the several pronged approach you're taking as a station?
Well, there's the first off, there's the Committee for Public Awareness and Strategic Resistance. That committee is made up mainly of concerned programmers, with a few of the directors from the board of directors, in trying to organize our public voices. And so they're working a lot on making a rally happen, which we're going to announce as soon as we hear back from the decision about the stay. And they're also working on garnering political support. There's the behind the scenes contingent of the public awareness and strategic outreach committee, which is made up of a few dedicated people like myself, Arman Mirza, and our webmaster, who are working to make it easy for the public to help us, i.e. the information that you're broadcasting is pretty much entirely based on stuff that we've created, and that our webmaster has put to our website the links for the petition, which now has over 3,000 signatures. And it's certainly not limited to people in Ontario. I urge all of your listeners to go to ckln.fm and sign that petition. It would be great if we could get interprovincial support and support from other campus community radio people. And if you could put that's who you are in the comments to the CRTC, that would help us.
But that's all the time we have, I'm afraid. We've got to move on. But I'll let you know that there's 3,015 signatures, and we're asking our listeners to please sign, because we want to get to the goal by the end of the three-hour period, 3,330. So we still have 315 to go. So please go to ckln.fm to sign and to get updates on the situation. Thank you so much, Lauren, for joining us today.
Thank you so much for your interest and your support, Courtney. It means the world.
So I've just been speaking with Lauren Spears, who is the host of Rebel Music and the head of CKLN's legal defense team. Now we're going to go to a piece produced by CKUT's Gretchen King. She spoke last Friday with two researchers about the CRTC decision to revoke CKLN's license. Gretchen was joined by Jeremy Stern, who studies communication and media policy in Canada, and Sylvia Blake, who is researching the CRTC, both of them based at Ryerson University.
On the line with us, we have Jeremy Stern. He is a FQRSC postdoctoral fellow at Ryerson University, and his research contributes to the study of communication and media policy in Canada, including the 2010 book, Media Divides, Communication Rights, and the Right to Communicate in Canada. We also have Sylvia Blake on the line, who studies the CRTC and the graduate program in communication and culture at Ryerson University. She's a former technical producer and business manager from CFRC Radio at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you. It's
my pleasure. Thank you.
So the big news this week for the campus community radio sector is the revocation of CKLN's license. And I'm wondering what has been your reaction to this decision to revoke the license of Toronto's first campus radio station, CKLN?
Well, first of all, to start off, Gretchen, I think because we're talking from Ryerson University, we have to just give a very clear disclaimer at the beginning, which is we're not speaking on behalf of Ryerson University. And I know the administration has issued public statements, and I'd encourage your listeners to track them down either in newspapers or to contact the administration directly if they're interested in their opinion. We're speaking in a capacity as researchers and not about something that involves Ryerson facilities or students or administration. But I think we're all a little surprised, as longtime observers of the CRTC, about some of the elements of the discussion. And it's worrying in a number of ways for the trajectory of community radio in Canada.
And yourself, Sylvia?
I absolutely agree with Jeremy. I understand that a lot of things were not going well for CKLN and hadn't been going well for CKLN. They had been having issues back for until or since about 2009, as far as I know. The decision overall seems a little bit harsh, I think, and is not a common one from the CRTC.
Can we break down the decision a little bit? You speak to it as being a bit harsh and uncommon. Perhaps you can speak to some of the specifics about the decision that stand out for you. Jeremy, do you want to go first?
Sure. I mean, it wasn't the first thing that has to be noted is that it wasn't a license renewal proceeding. It was a revocation of the license. So in other cases, most notably the Schwa FM case from a few years ago, where there were a series of public complaints against objectionable content being discussed on the air, the CRTC first gave a shortened license renewal period. So in the Schwa FM case, you had them, rather than renewing the license for the maximum amount of time because of the complaints, they renewed it for a shorter amount of time. And then subsequently, when the shorter amount of time ended and there were still complaints and they still weren't confident in the management's role in addressing the complaints, they refused to renew the license. And in the case of CKLN, this didn't happen at a license renewal period. They had it pulled, they had the plug pulled in the middle of a license renewal period. So in Schwa's case, where you had objectionable content that ended up being proven to be libel in a court of law, one of the people that the on-air personalities were essentially bullying, were using their radio show to bully, ended up suing them for libel and won a judgment in the Quebec Superior Court. And in that case, you still had to wait until one license renewal period came up to get a slap on the wrist, and then a second license renewal period came up to pull the plug. And in the case of CKLN, which is an amateur-run station and not a professional-run station, you had the plug pulled in the middle. They didn't even get the benefit of the doubt of waiting until the license was up for renewal.
Does this mean a double standard for community and campus radio stations? Because we're amateur, maybe they're a little bit more stricter with our sector. What's your experience been with researching the CRTC, Sylvia?
To go back and give a little bit of background on why the CRTC regulates to begin with, and maybe some of the things that are making them a bit uncomfortable about this, CKLN had effectively lost control of the airwaves for about 7 months when there was an issue where a particular group locked out the station and locked other people out of the station, and they were playing repeats and random streams from a radio station in the States without their permission and weren't completing their paperwork. Now, the reason that the CRTC regulates radio as carefully as it does is because, as we know, airwaves are finite. There are not infinite number of stations available for people. The airwaves, therefore, are a public good. So broadcasting isn't a right, it's a privilege. Now, and to go back a little deeper into the CRTC history, before the CRTC even existed, a lot of the airwaves were being supported by churches because they were finding that radio wasn't very profitable at the time. And the churches moved in and saw this as a fantastic way for them to spread their message to those who couldn't make it to Mass every week. And there were issues way back then about the stations that were owned by Jehovah's Witnesses kind of came to a head at a point when the Jehovah's Witnesses actually lost control of one of their stations, which got taken over by the Ku Klux Klan. And this led to the creation of the Aird Commission, which eventually in 1932 led to the creation of the CRBC, which began regulating radio as a national medium and was the beginning of the idea of radio as something that needed to be nationally regulated.
The metaphor of the KKK taking over a church radio station is a good one because in this case it wasn't so much the fear of the KKK, but it's the fear of losing the public's interest. And the fear of the regulator being able to account for the public's interest. And once you have uncertainty about who's responsible for the license that's been granted, once you have members of the public voicing complaints about the way the station's being run, which is one thing, but on the other hand, the contents of what's being aired on the station, which is another thing, which we had in this case. And thirdly, which I think is the most fundamental series of complaints that the CRTC got from the general public around the CKLN situation was the absence of community involvement in a community radio station. So in other words, it had in essence been captured, was the accusation that some members of the public were being made. And with the uncertainty about who was the responsible management, who was the reporting management, and the absence of effective reporting to the CRTC from station managers, the CRTC was legitimately worried that they had no way of enforcing license conditions. So put that to aside. I mean, it's not quite the KKK capturing a station, but when the public members of the public are complaining about a radio station that's supposed to serve their needs, and the CRTC is legitimately worried, and I think in this case they had cause to be legitimately worried, that they're incapable of enforcing the license conditions onto management, there's cause for concern. So we're not saying they acted without cause. But what I find a little bit troubling, in particular going back to the Schwa case, where a professional company, a media firm called Gen X Communications, had many of the same traits. There were numerous public complaints ranging from, as I mentioned, the case of an individual who was being bullied by on-air personalities, but the same on-air personalities were also spewing hate speech, making defamatory comments about race and ethnic groups and people with disabilities, etc. And that professional media firm wasn't taking their responsibility to manage their licensed properties seriously in the CRTC's eyes either, and they were given slaps on the wrist and more chances. So in this case, it's not a questioning whether or not the CRTC had cause to make some kind of intervention. It's this seeming double standard wherein an amateur radio station is somehow being expected to be run more professionally than a professional radio station was being in the Schwa FM case. And part of that, I think, just speaks to systemic marginalization of the community and alternative and campus radio sectors in Canada.
I think this also speaks to the issue of the CRTC revoking the license because of the management of the station, but also essentially taking the license away from the community as well, the community that you mentioned had been locked out and had also been part of that complaint process. Yeah. Do you see that this decision is part of a disservice to that public?
Well, I have to say, one of the things I'm very concerned about from my reading of the decision, I didn't see anywhere the CRTC launching a call for applications for a new campus and community radio station on the frequency that was previously reserved for CKLN. So as far as I can tell, and I hope somebody will follow up with the CRTC on this, on where things stand, as far as I can tell, they've revoked the right of CKLN to broadcast on that frequency, and there don't seem to be, in as much as I can read, any immediate plans to give a new, or to launch, or create, or to incubate a new campus community alternative sector station or service that would occupy that frequency that is reserved for the community sector.
Yes, I have to admit I kind of had the same concerns as Jeremy when I read the CRTC decision that in other decisions, I know they've explicitly said that bidding is now open for another station of this type, and in this case we're not seeing that. Now, going back to your question about disservice to the community, and just once again kind of taking from Jeremy's comments, he mentioned the sort of the chronic marginalization of campus and community radio in Canada, and having been part of campus and community radio, it is true that they really have a tall order, and it's very, very difficult for campus and community radio stations to act at a similar standard to a commercial station. And in some ways, especially when it comes to things like paperwork and legal challenges and legal battles, it's somewhat unfair that the CRTC expects campus and community radio stations to be able to operate at the same standard as a station that is operated for profit and has a large staff of experts that can help them navigate the minefield that is broadcasting and telecommunications policy in Canada. What I think happened wasn't necessarily that the CRTC was discriminating specifically against the station that it saw as a campus and community station, but I think holding them perhaps to a standard that might seem reasonable or more doable for a commercial outlet, or even an outlet with a normal staff that isn't run almost entirely by volunteers, whereas campus community stations, oftentimes the staffs are very small. As I'm sure you're fully aware, people often occupy many different roles and are often very much run off their feet.
But another important element of the mandate of campus and community radio in Canada is to provide a training ground for future radio professionals, is to provide access to careers in the media and for training in working in the media for people from diverse backgrounds. It's an entry point. And in some senses, I find it a little bit unfair to expect that trainees are always going to be perfect, because nobody is inherently perfect when they're being trained to do something. And clearly, there are degrees here, and in this case, it was not really a question of being less than perfect. It was a question of being less than competent and less than trustworthy. But at the same time, again, I find the precedent of this double standard wherein community radio stations are being expected to be more professionally run than professionally run stations are to be troubling going forward, knowing that part of the reason that these stations exist is to provide people the opportunity to learn on the job.
Some of the points that you make are in Commissioner Luis Poirier's dissenting opinion, which has also been made public with the CRTC's decision to revoke CKLN's license. In her dissenting opinion, she does say that she's firmly opposed to the panel's majority decision to revoke the license, and she acknowledges the history of CKLN having been started in 1983 and gone through several processes of full license renewal with no complications and no problems. So this is a station with, you know, a 30-year history nearly, and this is its first run-in with the CRTC, and boom, it's no longer a station. Is there anything about Louise Poirier's decision that stands out for you, Sylvia or Jeremy?
She uses the term unprecedented more than once, and she'd know better than either of us would what the CRTC approach has been in previous decision, previous instances of perceived non-compliance with license conditions. So I think there is quite a bit of weight to her claim that this is an exceptional action on the part of the CRTC in this case, and it is one that may not fit within the usual relationship between expectations and punishment that the CRTC doles out. I think if there's hope for your listeners and for the campus and community radio community in Canada, it comes from that dissenting voice in this case.
One other thing I'd like to add as well is that just in line with them having a kind of a long history and never of having issues before, is that one other challenge that campus and community radio stations face is a very high turnover rate, not just for their programmers, but also for board members and for staff and management. So I think something the CRTC maybe needed to keep in mind was that there was potential to fix the station. It doesn't have a long history of having problems. It's within the nature that turnover happens, and sometimes things get difficult in a campus and community radio station. Sometimes you have a lot of people that are all new all at once, and as I'm sure you're well aware, people get very emotionally attached to the campus and community radio station they're part of. It's more than just a station to them. It's part of their lifestyle. It's where they go to hang out. It's where they socialize. And tensions can run high sometimes when pressure is up, and especially if you feel like you're under fire from the CRTC. So I think they perhaps needed to see CKLN and not as something that was permanently broken and not worth salvaging, but something that a group that needed help and that probably needed a bit more time to get their act together.
On the line with us, we have Jeremy Stern, a researcher focusing on communication and media policy in Canada. Also Sylvia Blake, who focuses on the CRTC now, both speaking to us from Ryerson University, where they're based. Sylvia, Jeremy, it'd be great to get your opinion on the atmosphere at the CRTC. What has been the impact of the Conservative government on that climate, and is there any